Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm here today with my guest, Jeff Nixa, and we are going to be talking about his latest book, The Lost Art of Heart Navigation, A Modern Shaman's Field Manual. Jeff is a shamanic practitioner, teacher, and writer, and he is the founder of the Great Plains Shamanic Program, and he'll tell us all about that. Thank you for joining us, Jeff.
Thank you for having me, Susan. It's great to be here.
Well, would you like to tell our listening audience a little bit about your history and how you got involved in shamanism?
Yeah, I was actually just online looking at your history and medical background, and it reminded me of I originally wanted to be a physician myself, and I was a pre-med in college, and wound up not going that path, but I did spend 20 years in healthcare as a professional hospital chaplain. I was a lay Catholic chaplain at some big medical centers and smaller ones, extended care, hospice, and very much enjoyed the work, found it very challenging and rewarding, but always for myself felt that there was something missing. As a spiritual caregiver, of course, I was in the medical realm, but not of it, so to speak, coming from a different perspective. And even as a chaplain, though, the limitations on my role in terms of traditional religious training and so-called interventions, it just, I don't know, I have a great love for the earth, nature, and it just was, of course, never a part of that in the institutional medical world, helping connect people to nature and just the unseen realms, as we say, in shamanic practice. So I didn't know what I was missing. It wasn't that I was conscious of that, but it was always a kind of restlessness to go deeper somehow or broader, and I didn't know how. And long story short, in 2009, I did a vision quest with a powerful shamanic healer named Michael Smith in Michigan. And that just opened my eyes, spending a week on a remote wilderness island in northern Lake Michigan, fasting for 2 days and nights and praying for a vision. And boy, I got one, and it changed my life. So things started to unfold from there really fast. I was sort of loaded for this kind of work, and again, just didn't know what I was looking for. And when I found it, I instantly recognized what I had felt was missing all those years. So that's a long answer to your question.
Oh, that's not too bad. You had also gotten a law degree, is that right?
Yes, that was my first professional foray after college. I was a political science international relations major, and not really having a clear sense of my my path, which is another thing I like about shamanic work, is the navigational tools you get. But I went into law school immediately after college, and immediately within the first week had a strong sense that was not where I was supposed to be, but I didn't know what else to do. And I was frightened. I was embarrassed to think of telling my family and friends and classmates that I was going to quit and not having a better idea, so I stuck with it for a year, disliking it the whole time. I took a year's leave of absence and went out to New York City and tried to follow my bliss, but I didn't have a support group and still didn't have a clear sense of my heart, as we say. So I actually wound up back in law school and finished it and got my law degree and was a member of the Oregon Bar for a while, but never practiced.
I found the same thing at Johns Hopkins. I was pre-med there, and I was on my path because I was supposed to be a doctor. It was pretty clear that I loved what I did and felt very fulfilled by it, but some of my classmates were there because their parents thought they should be doctors. And of course, their soul or higher self didn't agree. And they were very conflicted. And I witnessed that, you know, your soul's purpose is not always what your family or peers or other people say you should do. It actually has to come from the heart, like your book says.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's not the world's job to help us individually come alive. I tell that to my clients, and we're the only ones who are responsible for that. I actually met at the time when I left the law practice. I felt like the loneliest guy on the planet because I didn't know anyone else who had gone all the way through a graduate program successfully and chosen not to do it.
Right.
But years later, I've met quite a number of attorneys and physicians and other professionals mm-hmm. who now I realize, and they did, that they too were struggling but just didn't have the tools to find their path. Yeah. So turns out I wasn't alone, but I didn't know it.
One of my anesthesiologists here went through law school and in practice for a while, and he is just the sweetest and, you know, most wonderful doctor in the world. But I look at him, I go, I can see why you cannot be an attorney. you just don't have that, you know, that focus and attack mode that attorneys need in certain situations anyway. But he makes a great anesthesiologist, so... But eventually, these people are lucky, and you were lucky that you were able to get off of that. Because I think a lot of people, I mean, what I see is that a lot of people end up getting cancer and getting taken out early.
Yeah.
A lot of people end up with chronic disease so that they're on disability. And really, the main problem is that they're not on their path.
Exactly. I thank you for mentioning that. I absolutely, and I had all in my book. I briefly mentioned some of the
your stomach
the
problems,
physical,
yeah.
exactly, and depression,
right.
and GI issues, and mm-hmm. and now I look around the world from that perspective, and I'm sure you do too. Just wonder how many. Look at this walking wounded population,
right.
and how much of that is just people being off their path, you know, and not knowing it. And trying to find the medical solution exclusively and how unsatisfactory that can be for them.
Yeah.
So.
Very, very true. But, you know, there are so many different ways to get to your path. I mean, the shamanic way is a great way because, of course, in a vision quest, you put yourself in an altered state of consciousness that mm-hmm. allows you to communicate with your higher self. But, you know, some people do it through near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
I'm sure you've met them.
Yes, yes.
Some people do it through, you know, psychotherapy, although it may take mm-hmm. 10 years.
you know, yeah, yeah.
It's a slower method, but you know. And then some people actually do have a serious, serious health breakdown. And
mm-hmm.
while they're under analysis of why that is, these other things come to light. So, but you know, the better way to do it is outlined in your book, where you don't have to go into crisis to shift.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for mentioning that about the NDEs too. And I mean, that is the classic shamanic initiation throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
It was typically the oddball in the tribe or the clan who had mm-hmm. what we might call a nervous breakdown or a psychotic break, and
mm-hmm.
and yet those cultures had the understandings and the mythologies and the social structures to handle that. So. The person,
right.
instead of being seen as unusually ill, was often seen as unusually gifted. For example,
right.
black elk or crazy horse in the Lakota tradition, they
mm-hmm.
They weren't doing well for weeks and months there at a time, you know, or be in conscious state, but would bring
mm-hmm.
back these tremendous visions that the elders had the ability to interpret and support them. So, yeah, we've come a long way from that. But it often, for people who have traditionally gotten into this work, is the result of some kind of major medical or psychological or spiritual breakdown, as you say.
Right.
And I love that because it gives people a mechanism and a meaning system to handle that, you know,
yeah.
a way forward.
And it has to come from within.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you are, it is true that, spirit puts people in your pathway, like you as a chaplain advising them at a time of crisis, or me walking into an ER and asking the person who just got hit over the head, didn't something tell you not to go to Waffle House tonight? That was my great story when she went to Waffle House at 3 a.m. and got in a fight with a cook, and he took a condiment tray and broke it over her head, you know.
Oh,
and she said, yeah, actually, something did tell me not to go to Walmart or to Waffle House. And I said, well, maybe next time you'll listen to it.
Uh-huh, right.
And you know, it's like that inner voice, you know, your voice of your conscience or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, but hopefully we won't have to have such dramatic lessons. Hopefully we can listen to that voice, that inner voice, on a more regular basis without, you know, having to have all these traumas.
Yeah, I was just thinking that on the drive over here to where I'm talking to you on this phone about my own experiences. Actually, quiet little voices like you're talking about. It's mm-hmm. not been generally dramatic psychosocial spiritual breakdowns. It's just been
right,
noticing those little voices, kind of the peripheral vision of the heart and the awareness, the consciousness, and paying attention to those instead of just going, oh, that's an interesting synchronicity, and then plowing forward. It's asking, well, what is that, and exploring it. So that's turned out to be my kind of day-to-day mode of shamanic navigating, more than dramatic vision quests or drumming and dancing and journeying and all that.
Right, and it has to be on a moment-to-moment basis. You probably have the same thing that I do when you first wake up in the morning. You and I are the same, by the way. I am not a morning person at all. Which is sad because I have to start surgery at 7:30 every morning.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
But the staff know not to talk to me until about 10. You know, like.
So your eye-hand coordination is still good. It's just not your verbal.
Yeah, I'm good in surgery, but I do not want to be interacting with people. You know, I'm not. I'm exactly like you. It's really funny. But
well, I appreciate you doing this radio interview then at noon and not at 8 a.m. So thank you.
There you go. Well, I'm probably a better interviewer at noon than 8 a.m. I'm sure I am. But the idea is that when you wake up, and I'm sure you've felt this, that the first impressions that you get are very, very important. You should never, never brush them aside.
Yeah.
Because you're just coming out of the realm where you're much closer to consciously, you know, to your higher conscious. And messages at that point are very easy to get in. And then the other thing, you know, during your morning shower, you may have the same type of thing if you can just blank your mind and not try to think too much, or any time when you can blank your mind during meditation. But these impressions are very, very important. And I think the goal in life is really to just walk in meditation so that you can continuously get this information from the higher levels, and your life will be so much easier.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of putting it. I've never really thought of it that way, but it is. It's like just walking as much as you can in a, we might call a mindful state or a gentle state of shamanic consciousness. And my first teacher talked about that. When you, upon waking, the veil between the worlds is still very thin, he would say. And it's easy even to, we were trained how to go back into, say, dreams in that liminal state where you're partly awake but still wide open to the other sources of information and awareness.
Right.
And you can sort of work that as opposed to just passively accept the dreams and then later try to figure out what they're about. But go back in and connect with the troubling or the interesting, intriguing imagery and characters. So I agree. That's a very. I assume you're not doing that during surgery at 8 a.m., but I know what you mean, before you get to work.
Well, yeah. Even during surgery, a lot of times I'm connected with that higher realm. I have, let's see, I have 15 spiritual surgeons that work with me and 8 medical doctors that work with me.
Wow.
And I don't know all of them personally. I know some of them. But I consciously work with them during surgery, and we use muscle testing, applied kinesiology, to determine things that we don't know during surgery, like did we get all of the tumor out, or did we get hemostasis, which is important, you know, because every so often an artery will burst open in recovery, and you got to take them back in. So we're using this information on a constant basis in surgery to determine all these questions that we have that we may not. We do our due diligence. I mean, we look in the wound to make sure nothing's bleeding, but we also do muscle testing to determine that the bleeding is controlled. And when it isn't, when the muscle testing indicates it isn't, and I go back in, I will find a bleeding point always that was missed. You know, usually on the upper flap. We're removing breast implants, so there's a big, big area in there that could bleed. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that we have tremendous amount of help from our spiritual guides, and they're often in the same area that you are. Like anesthesia has their guides, surgeons have their guides, attorneys have their guides, and, you know, shamanic teachers like yourself have your guides, you know. And so you should ask for information. You should ask for help.
That's a beautiful way of putting that. I'm excited to hear you're doing this kind of integration in your, you know, scientific medical practice. But it's unfortunate, I think, a lot of intelligent, more rationally minded people see these kinds of approaches as somehow antithetical or at the other end of a spectrum and unhelpful. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's anything but. These can augment and help, and in some cases, be the primary guide for things that maybe the instrumentation hasn't picked up, just like you described. So that's beautiful.
Well, I think the most important thing to realize is that we have access to a vast world of information that is beyond our normal time-space continuum.
Yeah.
You know, we really do. And I don't think most people know that.
Right.
But geniuses do.
Yes.
I mean, geniuses in terms of innovation, and I'm not talking pure IQ, geniuses in terms of any leader in their field. You talk about Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Steve was inspired from a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was no question that he was. Einstein was. Whenever you look at the great people who bring things into the world that change the world, they are usually conscious that they are being guided. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Steve meditated on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And he saw himself as an artist more than a tech guy in his own book. I thought that was fascinating. He had the technical skills, obviously, but that wasn't what he was about. He was trying to bring new things into the world, which obviously he did very well. And and I was stunned by there were some photos I remember in his book of his home, and yes, it was palatial, but it was very minimalist. There was like a table and a chair. And
that's because he never bought furniture.
Exactly. I found that fascinating, but he sure had his attention in the right place, not on stuff, per se.
Yeah,
and the access to the vast world you mentioned, absolutely. I in my introductory programs, I try to help people understand this shamanic realm, which can be a little vague or kind of astral to some people, is just the collective web of intelligence, of consciousness, and that
it is. Yeah.
The shamanic journey helps us plug into that, like you'd plug your USB jack into something. So it why not think bigger and in more dimensions if that's available to us?
What I tell people is to do this exercise. Think of all the tables in the world. I mean, there's a lot of tables, right? And there's a lot of different kinds of tables. But think in the higher mental realm of the idea of a table.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you have the idea of a table. Now, how important is it to, you know, be in the world dealing with all the tables, or isn't it more important and more meaningful to be in the higher mental realm developing the concept of the table?
Mm-hmm. Instead of fighting about one particular table design and
going to war over
against
the table.
All others, that's not a table, this is a,
Yeah, right.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
I mean, that sounds like Plato and his, you know, cave of the forms and so on, the shadows, yes.
So we have the higher mental realm, which is just before the spiritual realm, and the higher mental realm is where we should be focusing our attention in terms of changing the, let's see, what would you call it, the constructs of what we need to do to solve problems. I mean, basically, you start with a problem, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a problem that you want a solution for. But you have to go to the higher mental realms to bring in the information on how to do that, because that information isn't here at the lower mental realms or at the even the physical realm.
Yes.
So that's how I look at it. I look at it as, you know, you go into a realm of more less dense world. You know, the mental realm is the world of ideas rather than the world of physical things. And you ask for help. And you've got a lot of help up there. You really do.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be given a lot of ideas. That's why the idea for a light bulb came to many different people at one time, because that the world was ready for that idea at that time.
Yeah, this, I'm thinking about traditional shamanic terms like journeying and visioning, and it sounds like that. Like
it does.
You
yeah.
go out there
exactly
and you get
that.
The vision, and of course you still have to translate it back into the 3D world using our intellect and reason, but why not reach as high as we can into that higher mental realm you're talking about? Absolutely.
You can do the same thing for personal problems, too, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can create great things like Steve Jobs and Edison did and Einstein, but you can also go into the higher realms to get answers for your personal problems. Because if you have too many personal problems, it's really hard to do the job you came to do.
Yeah. Stumbling over the things in front of our face. It's primarily what I'm doing with my clients is helping them with individual personal issues. And what I love about the shamanic approach is you can connect with the spirit of the issue itself, because the belief is that everything has a sort of consciousness or spirit. So our depression has a spirit, our anxiety, our anger and resentment and all of that. And you can actually have an interaction that's helpful, not just a sort of speculative, conversation back and forth, but ask questions and get helpful responses that can be used in daily life and sort of go to the heart of that in a way that at least I've found much more satisfying than traditional psychotherapy and so on, where you're trying to figure out the source, perhaps, of a wound or a pattern, but the insight itself doesn't necessarily lead to change. So,
well, I always assume that everything that is, be it cancer, be it depression, be it panic attack, anything that is there for a reason.
And
as you said, it may not be the reason that first would come to your mind, it's like a punishment for something, that would be something that somebody would say, well, I'm being punished for such and such. No, it really isn't. And it's a blockage in energy. I mean, that's everything is energy, as you know very well. And
yes.
But the form of the blockage and the, like you say, the shamanic investigation is important to really permanently remove the blockage, but without fighting with it. Because once you start fighting with something, you can get into an endless battle where, you just expend a lot of energy.
Yes.
My depression, fighting my cancer. Yeah, you've heard those terms.
Oh, yeah. And if I could just give an example in my own life of a counter with what I thought might be cancer. I'm a runner, and I was triathlete and all this in my 40s. And at one point, I was running and realized my thighs were rubbing together, which is strange because I'm a very thin, tall guy. And I looked down, and long story short, I had an 8.5-centimeter tumor on the inner thigh muscle. I believe it was one of my quad muscles. And the MRI was inconclusive. They weren't sure whether it was cancer or not, a sarco something, or just a... I wound up scheduling with IU Cancer Center to have it removed, but for weeks, of course, prior to that, I was fretting and worrying about it and scary thing. And so I wound up doing a shamanic ceremony as part of my training with Crow's Nest Center for Shamanic Studies, where I was studying at the time. And it was a form of traditional soul extraction, we call it, where the practitioner helped me journey to the tumor itself and for information about what was its nature. And what came for that for me was this image, bear with me here, but the image of a cat, a little cat that was, like I lift the hood of my car and there's a cat sitting on the engine, right? The cat shouldn't be there. It was not a frightening or harmful cat, and there was nothing wrong with the cat, but it shouldn't be in the engine. And I came out of that journey with that sense of, okay, so the cat was the tumor, so to speak, the spirit of the tumor, saying, yeah, this shouldn't be here, but it's not dangerous, per se. And there was a profound healing for me, because from that point forward, I completely lost the anxiety and the fear about that tumor. I still needed to get it out. It was still there. And it was just stunning, because I tend to be an anxious guy who worries too much about the future and possibilities. And I will never forget that. So I had it out. Things went well and turned out the path labs, it was fine. It wasn't cancerous. But that really brought home to me this kind of spiritual healing that can go along hand in hand with the medical, beautiful medical powers we have. So.
Yeah, and the other thing is to determine, you can even go into a benign tumor and find out what it's all about. I mean,
yes,
we do that a lot
yes.
with muscle testing.
Ah.
You know, like a benign tumor. I found a benign tumor that was trying to turn premalignant in one of my patients in a breast nodule.
Mm, interesting.
And that's what we got on muscle testing. I did the ultrasound, and there it was. It was calcified, just like it would be around a parasite, you
mm-hmm.
know. Yeah. So
I'm curious. I'm familiar with muscle testing, but not in the surgical realm. Can you quickly describe how you do that, an example?
Well, say you want to know what causes cancer.
Yeah.
Cancer is caused, well, you're a shaman. I'll tell you what causes cancer.
Yeah, okay,
and
thanks.
You go, yes, I knew that. Uh-huh. That's what you'll say. Cancer is a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third dimension,
okay.
into an area of low energy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's
okay.
all energetic.
Uh-huh.
It's not demonic like schizophrenia. It's
mm-hmm.
not Dark Lord like Morgellons. Morgellons
mm-hmm.
is totally Dark Lord. Dark Lord trying to stop a spiritual person from participating in the ascension.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer is just stupid eater. You know, in other words, it just comes in. It has no intelligence. It
yeah.
has babies and spreads.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always into an organ of low energy. Now, what lowers the energy of an organ?
Mm-hmm.
Emotional is number one in primary cancer. I'll give
mm-hmm.
you an example. This is Dr. Hammer's work in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
If you're right-handed and you have someone who's supposed to protect you betray you, you can get left breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
If you, on the other hand, have someone that you nurture either reject you or die or almost die, even a dog dying, you can get right breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so every single cancer has an emotional component. What emotion will lower the energy in that organ? Kidneys, it's relationships. Pancreas, it's like getting mad at God. That's
mm-hmm.
that's a big one.
Interesting, okay.
So primary cancer is often emotional, but not always. Other things are generational curse. Now, what is a curse but a fourth dimensional intrusion into a third dimension? Geopathic stress, which is a low, you know, a water ground, underwater stream.
Mm-hmm.
And if you sleep on a bed and it's under you, then your whole body gets lowered in energy.
Mm.
Electromagnetic, the most common electromagnetic is the smart meters. It could be on your gas, electric, or water meter. And that's actually the most common cause right now of recurrent cancer. So you have to be very careful about that, and especially if you've had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Infectious, viral, bacterial, fungal, and mildew, oddly enough. Mildew is usually involved in leukemia and sometimes prostate cancer. And then toxic chemical. We all know about carcinogens. And then radiation. There's been a lot of radiation lately from Fukushima and other. There was a nuclear weapon exploded over Antarctica in February that most people don't know anything about, but they could have gotten exposed to radiation then. And we have a supplement called Rad Detox, which is really good at getting rid of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then dental. If you have a root canal on your breast meridian tooth, you can
mm-hmm.
lower the energy to the breast.
Mm-hmm.
Steroids. I had one patient recently get steroid injection for neck pain,
mm-hmm.
and she had she got recurrent cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, steroids will in a situation that where you really shouldn't get steroids. Sometimes even steroids will lower the immune system enough to do that. You know, if you've already had cancer. So,
mm-hmm.
you see the picture. It's
yeah.
anything that lowers the energy. So, what do you do? What's the cure for cancer? I can give it to you right now.
Mm-hmm.
You muscle test to see the cause.
Mm-hmm.
You treat the cause.
Mm-hmm.
You put energy back into the organ using scalar and orgon energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you close the portal. Do you know how you close the portal?
No, tell me how.
Okay, well, you can find a shaman that knows how to close the portal.
Yes, of course. And
you ought to work on this. This is neat. Two of my shamans that worked with me, who are no longer here, but they were curing cancer and Morgellons right and left. And they
okay.
came to me and said, we're closing this portal, and this stage 4 cancer is going away. I said, yeah, well, that makes sense, you know, because that's where cancer is coming from. But I'm not a shaman, and
mm-hmm.
I did a shamanic exercise one time, and guess what happened?
Mm.
I got breast cancer from the patient. That's
interesting.
Right.
Interesting. Uh-huh.
I did, yeah. I didn't know how to be a shaman because
yeah,
I wasn't
right.
trained.
The intrusions got into you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And another friend of mine who was a Reiki healer, and a massage therapist, like yourself, mm-hmm. she went home to take care of her mother with stage 4 cancer, and within months she died of stage 4 cancer.
Yeah.
And I know very well she got the cancer because she merged her energy system with her mother's.
Yeah.
And did not know how to protect herself. So anyway, just more proof. Okay, so you're in a great position as a shamanic teacher to figure out how to close that portal and teach other people. But I'm not, so guess what I do?
You get others to help you.
Abilify.
Ah.
Yeah. Abilify is the only antipsychotic that is safe enough to use in almost anybody, except maybe if you're in your 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Even 70s. I had two friends who were very, very healthy and were macrobiotic, you know, everything, and they both got anal cancer at the same time from the smart meter. So I put them on Abilify. They did have surgery, of course, because it was anal cancer. You had to. But they're cancer-free now. So Abilify, and if you muscle test for somebody with Abilify, if they need Abilify, they have cancer somewhere. Either that or they're schizophrenic, but, you know, usually you can tell schizophrenic people. So anyway, that's cancer. How's that for muscle testing and determining the cause of an illness?
I love how it sounds like you're using the shamanic practitioners that you had earlier to help identify and close those portals. I get that.
Yeah.
I assume they were going on a journey themselves and doing assessments, finding out where those openings were.
Right. Well, they came to me because they were so shocked that they were getting the results they were getting. But it makes sense. The energy coming from that dimension. And it's so interesting. Some of my breast cancer patients that I put on Abilify say that they feel more normal. Because with that portal open, you can't be that comfortable.
Yeah, yes.
You know? Because it's got other stuff behind it that's not real good. And I don't have to tell you all about it. If you're a shaman, you already know what can be in that dimension.
Well, yeah, right? and you're giving good examples of what happens for people who are not skilled or trained well. They kind of get into these realms, and you sort of get slimed by the energies of the others. So it's very serious work, you know.
It is. You're absolutely right. And so
powerful.
I have a lot of respect for shamans and shamanic training. And like I said, two of my very, very close friends were excellent shamans that, again, they're no longer with us. So they do help me from the other side, though. So
I did a 2-year teacher training with Sandra Ingerman more recently, and a big part of our training was not just the interventions and the shamanic journeying and all this. It was protecting ourselves. It was being responsible. It was being what you might say ethically, you know, appropriate.
Right.
And because there's a lot of people get drawn to this work, and it can be some really funky kind of astral, far out people who are drawn to this because it so much involves energy, but they themselves are not grounded. And they haven't done their own shadow work, so to speak. And they get in trouble.
Yep.
And it's not their fault.
They do.
It's an innocent misunderstanding. But it's hard being a shamanic practitioner, like being a physician, right? You're around very sick people all day. And you got to keep yourself healthy. So
you do. And some
up.
Of the energies. There's physical cause of physical illness. You know, you take arsenic and you get sick, okay?
Yeah.
That's physical to physical. There's emotional cause. Which is, like you said, you were just settled. You had your energy flow to your solar plexus was messed up, and you got what was you felt was ulcer, but was probably just right before ulcer.
It was
getting to ulcer. It would have gotten to ulcer, but it's lowering the energy in the stomach, and then H. pylori comes in, and you know. But it's because you lowered the energy to your stomach, and some people. You know, have emotional, like, say somebody who thinks they're better than everybody, you know, very arrogant and prideful person.
Yeah.
That person will disrupt the solar plexus as well. So many different things can disrupt the solar plexus. Somebody who hardens their heart against their children can develop heart disease. That's an example. So every chakra, emotional stuff, if you abuse your sexual energy, your second chakra goes out of whack.
Yes.
So all of these things are from emotional. And then there's mental. And the mental, actually the arrogant thing is more mental. Because the emotional stuff is like for your emotions, fear-based and stuff like that, or anger-based. But mental, you can have the wrong thought form. And arrogance is a good example of that. And then there's spiritual illnesses. There's spiritual-based illnesses that are more karmic. I've seen RSD. It's a very, very bad neurological condition that occurs from a minor injury. And these people have horrible pain, just horrible pain. And many of them commit suicide if they can't get some relief, and they never get all the relief. And it usually lasts about 7 years. And every time I ask, every time, it's karmic. Every time. So that's a spiritually based illness. It comes in from previous lives.
I'm curious, because of your role in the medical world, how do you find this among your colleagues? I've worked at some wonderful medical centers, trauma centers, but not particularly open to this sort of thing. And I haven't been in that world for several years now. But how do you find these? I mean, this is powerful stuff, of course, you're talking about. You have, you know, evidence-based success and so on. What are you finding right now in the medical world among your peers, colleagues, in terms of openness to this or
Well, the or doctors resistance? That work here with me in the center are very open to it. I have chiropractor and a medical doctor and other practitioners here that are very open. But I stay pretty isolated here. I don't go out too much. I will be sharing all of this with the world when the time is ready. It's not safe yet. I've been shown the cause of most disease, and it's not what people think a lot of the times, and it's politically incorrect, and if the real truth came out, people would be quite unhappy with the powers that be because they know the cause of disease, and are continuing to go their merry way on depopulation agendas. So anyway, it's not safe now to do that. But no, I'm kept isolated for safety reasons. Obviously.
Yeah, that's a part of our training as well, is protecting our own hearts, we would say, and our own medicine, is you don't just take this out and let people stomp on it. And that's crazy.
The world is not a safe place right now, as you probably understand.
Yeah.
Not for people like you and me. We have a huge amount of spiritual protection, so we'll be perfectly safe. I'm not worried about my own safety, but I do know that I have to follow my guidance in order to maintain that safety. I could very easily get into trouble very quickly if I were to, you know, go on mainstream media in fact, I do go on mainstream media sometimes. It's interesting. I've been on the Today Show. I've been on Monsters Inside Me. I've been on The Doctors, but I always have to ask. Several times I was asked on NBC, and I heard no. So I just am very careful about what I say where.
There's a time when I would have been frustrated because of what you're saying, that it's difficult to get this healing information and resources out there. And yet what I'm finding when I calm down about that and just do what I do as well as I can, protect myself, that the people come to me more and more.
They do.
So I don't have to put a big effort into it. Is that your experience?
No. A while ago, I was way too busy, I mean, the whole world was coming to me because they were sick from their breast implants. And then some things occurred so that life became much more tolerable, and the patients coming in were wonderful. I just love my patients now. They're just so great, and we don't have the false accusations about, you know, billing and the trouble and the threatening to sue and just the crazy stuff that, I had patients that said we changed our OR times and, and then I find out that the patient has a schizophrenic diagnosis. No wonder I'm being attacked,
Then you find out.
Yeah, well, the husband told me. But, basically, the demonic base stuff has stopped completely.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what you've heard of sentinels, right? Sentinels are people out in front of you that are telling people how horrible you are to keep the people that don't need to come to you away from you. And you probably have them too. I think most of us do. And that's good. We should, we tell people that our sentinels are there for a reason. Because as you grow in your patient-to-patient referral, which will occur, client-to-client referral, you don't want just anybody coming to you.
Yes, yes.
You want the right people coming to you, not the people that are going to, take offense or do this or do that or have different agendas than getting well, because there's all sorts of different agendas out there.
Yes. I find in my own practice that the kind of people that are coming, the more I do this, there's the issues are more intense and you might say more difficult or challenging. But
that's because you're getting better at what you do.
Exactly. It's not them. Hopefully it's a good sign that I'm improving the quality. My first teacher, I just want to tell this quick story, Michael Smith, he started off very small. He was a psychologist with a practice in Southwest Michigan. He's a Jungian scholar and rediscovered his own roots as a Cherokee Matisse man and so on. And still, he was doing this work, but on a rather local, small basis.
Right.
And then fast forwarding, he's going all over the world, leading workshops and setting up programs. And at one point, as a newbie, I was just fascinated by how that happened. And he turned to me one point, he said, "You know, Jeff, I'm not doing any of this." And meaning he wasn't making an effort to grow his programs. In fact, he struggled, like anybody who's good at what they do, to keep it small enough. But at a certain point, if you just practice your medicine, I would say, capital M medicine, it ceases to be an effort. And like what you say about the sentinels will protect you. They'll keep the runway clear for you.
That's why you should never worry about them. You should never, let's talk about the four agreements. I love the four agreements.
And
the second one, I think, is don't take anything personally. When your sentinels are out there telling everybody how crazy you are and how unethical you are and how this and that, don't take it personally. It's part of your spiritual protection.
Exactly, and it's not about you.
That's
right. Slings and arrows that come at you. It's someone else's growth path. Yes, that was a big one. That was the big, most helpful one for me right off the bat.
Yeah. Well, tell the listening audience about the four agreements if they haven't. I have to have him on the radio show. I've been doing this radio show for 22 years.
Yeah.
And there's just certain things I love, and I love his book. I really do.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'm actually flipping to this in my own book here so I can do this a little more systematically. Don Miguel Ruiz, he was, I believe, a cardiologist or a cardiac surgeon in Mexico. He had Curandero grandmother and a Nahual grandfather teacher as a boy. But he's like, these are the old ways. And he went to medical school, became very successful.
Right.
And then I believe what happened was he had a massive heart attack at the kind of height of his practice. And that really, of course, opened his awareness to other things. And he began to re-explore his roots. And it's the Toltec tradition. He wrote this little amazing book, The Four Agreements, which is his personal distillation of the unwritten wisdom of the Toltec people, the indigenous spiritual teachers of North Mexico. And they're very simple. In fact, I'll confess, the first time I read the book, I thought, well, this is kind of simplistic. Because I was taking it too superficially. And then every time after that, I reread the book. But the four agreements, briefly, the first one is, these are little, they sound like simple aphorisms, but you'll see in a moment. The first one is, be impeccable with your word. And the idea there that is every single word that comes out of your mouth is like a seed, right? It can be a seed of love or a seed of fear. And we're sloppy. We're sloppy with our seeds, and we'll just have crap come out of our mouths if we're having a bad day. And that
this is killing me. Whenever I hear anybody say that, I go, "Don't do that."
You are harming your biochemical animal as well as your community around you. So it's about being very mindful and attentive of every word that comes out of your mouth. Are you sowing seeds of love and truth, or are you leaving behind you kind of just, a sewer of negativity.
Right.
The second one is what you mentioned earlier, is don't take anything personally. And that's just a powerful and simple reminder that what's coming at you is from other stuff. It's the fear-based things of other people, the needs, the worries, and so on. And while we do have to attend to our own business and mind our own shop, that if someone is pointing a finger at you and complaining, chances are it's their issue, of course, and this is not news. But when you're able to do that, the transformational part of this is when you're able to truly let the slings and arrows just pass on by, then you're able to be more authentic because you're not clipping your own responses to the world. Mm-hmm. And you're able, for example, to say, I love you to someone right. without fear of rejection or ridicule. And mm-hmm. you can say no without the similar fear of guilt, shame,
right.
self-judgment.
Yeah.
You can be authentic. And that is huge, especially for someone like me who is a chronic people pleaser.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
Minnesota nice, you know, for like 45 years. So
mm-hmm.
I'm still a nice guy, but I hope I'm a little more authentic now.
Right.
The third agreement is don't make assumptions, right? And that's
yep.
simply yet powerfully about if something's coming at you and you don't like it and it's upsetting you, take a breath, slow down, mm-hmm. and ask yourself, what's actually going on here? And if it involves
right.
another person, asking, you know, did you actually mean what I think you meant by that? And, of course,
mm-hmm.
half the time or more, it won't be that. We'll be injecting our own fear into that.
Or they have an assumption. That's
yes.
the other thing.
Yes.
What I used to do when something didn't make sense, I would actually go and put myself in their place, and then I would hear what their assumption was.
Yes.
And then I would correct that assumption by calling them and saying, look, I know that you think this, but that's not reality. That never happened.
Exactly. And so the countermeasure for that one is just what you're saying, is to ask questions and go back, say, to that person until both sides are clear about what the situation is actually
right,
about. So
yeah.
if you're going to have a fight, at least have it based on what's really going on.
Exactly.
Instead of the assumptions. And the fourth one is simply, yet again, powerfully, always do your best. And,
yep.
and the point of that, I mean, that just sounds like a Sunday school thing, but if in fact you're doing your best, that means you don't have to be perfect.
Right.
It's this chronic impossible standard that we think
mm-hmm.
we have to do. And so you're able to just do your best each day without
yep.
guilt, self-abuse, worry, regret. And
mm-hmm.
a nice thing Ruiz points out is your best will change from moment to moment, hour by
right.
hour, day by day. And that's going to go on the rest of our lives, and that's to expect that, not to have
yep.
a rigid bar. So that's Jeff's little summary of the four agreements. I hope I did.
Yeah, you did great. No,
well.
that's good. And people should really incorporate that into their daily practice, along with some of the other things that the Toltec method teaches, the recapitulation,
yes.
which is the going back over of things to determine where your assumptions might have been wrong, where your
yes.
behavior might not have been the best, you know, kind of a daily meditation thing to go back over and not really fight, but actually get information about things that so the next time that the situation happens, maybe you can handle it better. Jesus taught us that the sin was an ancient Aramaic term that meant to miss the mark.
Mm, yeah.
So when you sin, you're always going to be given another chance, you know. So you can do that recapitulation so that you can do better the next time it comes at you.
Yeah, Toltec work is particularly helpful at getting at the so-called demons or dragons in our thought
mm-hmm.
patterns that are
right.
negative and causing us to self-sabotage ourselves. It's, you know, it's one thing to have a vision for your life and a happy sense of where you want to go, but that's the easy part. The hard
mm-hmm.
part is all the barriers that get thrown up in front of us, both by
right.
ourselves and the world around us. And the Toltec traditions are particularly good at zeroing in our self-sabotage, the negative
mm-hmm.
thinking patterns, and all the stuff we're talking about here. So that's why it came into my training. And I'm really glad it did because, you know, in any work, it's important to do your so-called shadow work and work on your own stuff. But nobody tells you how to do that. It's like, yeah, I know that's important, but the Toltec approach is all about that, zeroing in
it
on,
is. And
on that.
I used to do the Toltec exercise, and I taught others to do it too, where you take the deep breath in and turn your head and release everything. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, that exercise that was in the Carlos Castaneda's material? That's
I
a powerful exercise.
That.
It was
yeah.
the one they did to get enough energy to jump off the cliff as the final exam. Remember, they had to jump off
yes.
the cliff as the
yes.
final exam and then switch dimensions before they hit the ground.
yeah.
That always impressed me.
Yes, yes. so
now, really, think about the conviction that it would take to do that. But that was the exercise that you did prior to doing that final exam so that you would have enough energy to shift dimensions.
Yeah.
So, but that's a good one. But you take a deep breath in and turn your head and release everything negative, and then you take a deep breath in and turn your head the other way and bring in all of the energy that you need to bring in for every single fear that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So the fears are like flashcards, okay?
Yeah.
That's what they say. You put each fear becomes a flashcard, and you ask Spirit to bring it up and show it to you. And then you do that exercise.
Yes.
And you just do it until your fears are gone.
Yes, and I love that, the systematic approach. Like, you don't just have to keep running from these things. You turn toward them.
And face them.
Face them, yeah. And there are specific tools, as you're talking about, on how to do that. That's what's, I think, been missing in a lot of our therapeutic Western community. You know,
right.
It's like, yeah, these things can mess you up and make you sick. Now, get better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how? You know, beyond trying to calm down. I love these ancient approaches, so thank you for that example.
Yeah. Well, I never was, I never found a shamanic, teacher other than my friends who taught me a lot, but, not a teacher like you did.
Mm-hmm.
But these exercises, anybody can do.
Exactly.
And that's, and then if you get a lot of benefit from that, you may want to go ahead and find a shamanic teacher, because I do believe that that having a teacher is very, very important if that is indeed your path. So,
thank you. And I this would be a good chance to just stick in a reassurance for people. I'm in Northern Indiana, okay, and this is a red state, and it's a lovely community and wonderful bunch of people. It tends to be pretty conservative, very traditional religious communities and families. And so, the S word, shamanism, can often get confused with Satanism and other things.
Like
that.
Right.
People don't know what we're talking about. So I've had to be very, very careful, and like you have, in what I put out there. And what I just want to say briefly is these are practices for anyone. In other words, this isn't a religious belief system, shamanic practice, that you have to, like, abandon everything that you've loved and change beliefs. You can use this you can use this as simply practical tools for dealing with old stuff, like you mentioned, recapitulation, for example, in the Toltec tradition, and moving forward on a much more life-giving and healthy and a balanced path in your life. So it's a toolbox, and it doesn't have to be. They're all rooted, of course, in specific cultures, but you can... can still be a faithful Christian, for example, my own roots.
Or a faithful Muslim,
integrate
it doesn't matter.
Exactly. It's like practicing yoga. You can do that without becoming Hindu, right? Or practice mindfulness without being a Buddhist. So,
exactly. So why don't you go ahead and give your contact information, because we're coming up at the end of our hour.
Yeah, thank you. My website is greatplainsguide.com or .net, Great Plains Guide. And my email is... greatplainsguide@gmail.com.
Great. Well, I know you have a lot of different programs that you offer and teachings that you offer, so hopefully the listeners will go out there and find what wisdom you have to share with them.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's just a joy to talk to you personally and hear all the amazing things you've been doing. And so thank you for your own ideas. I'm going to be looking into some of these resources that you've mentioned. So.
Great. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kalb. We've been interviewing Jack Nixa. His book, The Lost Art of Heart Navigation, A Modern Shaman's Field Manual, is a wonderful guide to get you back in the swing of things energetically and to help you find your life's soul's purpose in life's path if that has eluded you to date. This is Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.